Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is The Counter-Ruck, the Irish Times rugby podcast sponsored by Nifty Business. You can find out more at niftybusiness.ie. My name is Nathan Johns. I'm joined in studio, as ever, by Irish Times rugby correspondent Jerry Thornley and Irish Times rugby writer John O'Sullivan. We're the day after Ireland's second Six Nations victory of the season, 36-0. Jerry, we're just less than 24 hours out. How did you find yesterday? I thought being in the Aviva, a little bit flat.
No, we're going to start with the joke. Yeah, emphasis more on the third word than the first two, I would say. It was shocking atmosphere. Shocking. I'm sick talking about this. I don't want to talk about it anymore, actually. You're putting me in a bad mood now thinking about it. Okay. Like when Jameson Gibson Park scores or doesn't score at the end, nobody in the stadium is even aware because they've stopped watching.
It's bananas, isn't it?
They're all leaving the ground. This is the second best team in the world, winning their 19th match out of 20 with an all-time record run of home wins. I know it's a Sunday afternoon. I know there's not a great sense of jeopardy about the game, but, oh my goodness, when I think back to Stade de France and Bordeaux and Naples and the atmosphere that 30, 40, 50,000 away fans generated by comparison, and it can be done in the Aviva. I remember an All Blacks match in, I think it was 10 years ago, November 2013, the one they should have won.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was a Sunday game, that was a vibrant atmosphere. Now, admittedly, that's the All Blacks and this is Italy, that's a factor, but I also think it's the nature of how the crowd has changed and stuff. But anyway, it deserved a better atmosphere. Most of all, though, I really enjoyed the performance. I really enjoyed watching Ireland play. I particularly enjoyed Jack Crowley, the way he played.
You mentioned Jack Crowley. I think that midfield in general was excellent. I thought Stu McCluskey, you had a quietly excellent game, some good touches. Totally. Robbie Henshaw continues to look pretty good at 13. Obviously, James Lowe, player of the match. I've given you four names there. I'll decide which one of you wants to take any one of those. John, you wrote about Jack Crowley for today's paper.
Yeah, I thought he was great. I thought it was a different set of criteria or demands for yesterday's game. He did brilliantly in Marseille, the glare, post-Johnny Sexton era. He handled that pressure extremely well playing away from home. Yesterday was slightly different in the sense that he was getting good, quick ball and then it gave him an opportunity to showcase his individual skills. I thought he carried the ball to the line brilliantly. I thought his footwork was great. I thought his range of passing was really, really good. I thought his decision-making, by and large, apart from one or two, which you would expect anyway in any game, was first class. And I thought he brought his forwards and his backs into the game. I think it allowed Stuart McCluskey, who I agree had a really, really good game, and Robbie Henshaw, the two midfielders, to kind of shine as well. The one thing that you would say is that, and it was enforced when Hugo Keenan went off and he went to full back, and with all the changes that makes for a less cohesive team as a result of that, I thought, there were one or two moments when he was at full back that he didn't make good decisions.
It was interesting because Andy Farrell said as much.
He did,
afterwards.
Which was interesting,
I thought he started the game really well. In fact, I thought he played really well at 10. When he went to 15, he got a little bit wider. A few errors crept in there, but we'll work on that as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting that he would say that. He can be quite honest about his players. He can be moderately critical. The shame about Jack Crowley moving to fullback is if he had to do it from the start in Hugo Keenan's absence, were Hugo Keenan ruled out of the Welsh game, because with Jimmy O'Brien injured and with Mac Hansen injured, there isn't an awful lot of alternatives at fullback. So they either start Jack Crowley there or they start Kieran Frawley there, and I hope it's not Jack, because he's enjoying this run at that half. And that was the thing I liked about his performance yesterday. He looked like he was really enjoying himself. There was almost a hint of a smile when he gave that no-look pass for Hugo Keenan.
That was
just class. And I loved the way he took out two players and offloaded for Calvin Nash, bounced to his feet, and Craig Casey, in perhaps his best moment of a mixed match, the way he went around the corner, drew Ange Capobolso, and Crowley goes over for his try. Amazing to think that's his first senior try. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no. I think he's...
And also the way he took the ball to the line, as you said, and showcased his footwork, his strength, and that offload for Robbie Henshaw onto Stuart McCluskey and for the Dan Sheehan try. There's some lovely moments from him. And I think he's the future. I really do. And I think this is really encouraging for Irish rugby that we've never got into a Six Nations with such a callow pool at out half. There's always been a long-term heir to the throne there. And when they've come through, Humphreys, O'Gara, Sexton, that we've always had options there. This was real new era stuff. And his first two performances have been really, really encouraging. I think he's a class player, and hopefully this is the beginning of an amazing international career. I think it could be. That's all I'm saying. There's enough there in those two performances for us to be very encouraged by it.
Well, I think what really I find fascinating is, for all the kind of, and we mentioned it in the first week we were recording with Gordon Darcy, the kind of the cult of personality without half. Ireland as a country is obsessed with whoever the guy is. It was Humphreys, it was O'Gara, it was Sexton. You know, he probably will be Crowley, but we've never, I don't think any of those guys have had his individual threat. None of those guys were throwing offloads like the way he was throwing offloads the other day, or even just the panache of that no look pass. Like you said, it was interesting. James Lowe was up doing press yesterday, and he was asked about Crowley, and he said he doesn't have the Sexton aura, and he clarified that by saying he doesn't have the Sexton stare. So he doesn't have the kind of the angry interactions with his teammates. But what he does have is he does have that kind of swagger to throw that no look pass, and like you said, Jerry, enjoy doing so. That level of skill is something we haven't necessarily seen for a while.
I was like watching him. I thought I was watching Jack Crowley play under 20s for Ireland. That's exactly what he did. He was a superstar in 2020 when he played, and he, you know, you look at the length of the pitch try against Scotland. You look at everything he did. He was goose-stepping back in 2020, and it was great to see something like that.
There was a goose-step before that little offload to Calvin Nash. That's right, the Jack Crowley goose-step, you're right.
He's going to patent it, I think, next week. So he's
doing that, that's a sure sign his confidence flowing.
And he plays with that kind of, he struts, and that's what want from your out half. Yeah. You want to strut to the way he plays. So I think it's great to see that confidence. And like I say, Italy was asked a different set of questions of him. And he answered all those questions when he was playing out half. He created space. He took the space. He was a threat running. And if you think of how much that frees up other players and how much other performances benefited from having him as out half, it is, as Jerry was saying, it's great going forward, because if he's a threat, it means that he has to be watched. And that means that there's space elsewhere on the pitch for other players, or a little bit more time.
I don't think his error count is big a problem as people will make out to be, because if you're the out half, you have to make the most decisions. It's like the quarterback in American football. You are going to make the most mistakes because you make the most decisions. And if you're not making decisions, you're not worth anything. And there's no point having an out half that's playing 10 metres behind the gain line either. So they are playing it very flat at the gain line. It is higher risk, but it's higher reward. The one caveat I would have is the goal kicking. Like Munster against Toulon, Munster against Northampton. And again, yesterday, the conversion rate wasn't high enough of those conversions. And it contributed to Munster losing those couple of games, and he definitely can, and he'll get there, because we saw the goal kicking in Marseille was absolutely outstanding. But on you're absolutely right, Nathan. I think in his own way, Stuart McCluskey gave a really good understated performances, and Robbie Henshaw has now been so good in two games that it seems extraordinary to say, but Ireland have not missed Gary Ringrose. In the same way that Ireland haven't missed Johnny Sexton, they've not really missed Gary Ringrose, and I think Robbie Henshaw now is the man in situ. I think he holds on to the jersey. And Stuart McCluskey probably won't. Bundyaki will probably come back in. And Bundy's run of form at 12 for Ireland in big games is off the charts. But McCluskey, that pass for James Lowe, the unselfish pass for Dan Sheehan, that was two try scoring assists. And what Crowley and McCluskey both give Ireland at 10 and 12 that they haven't had before is, in tandem with Lowe, an offloading game. Each of the three had three offloads yesterday. McCluskey's a very good offload as well as a good distributor. I think he looked a bit leaner, John. He looked a little bit fitter, I thought, as well.
Yeah, I think the challenge for him, he's been challenged on a couple of occasions. Obviously, Andy Farrell made this point afterwards that Robbie Henshaw and Stuart McCluskey were challenged for their performance, I think, against Samoa, and they needed to kind of step up from that day.
World Cup qualifier, warm-up.
So, and they did, and they did. And if you look at the one thing with Stuart McCluskey, he's always been a brilliant offloader. You're looking for more aggression on both sides of the ball for the size of person that he is, and also for a more nuanced passing game. and he showed all of those qualities.
That's why Ireland were so dependent on James Lowe for so long. When Joe, remember James Lowe missed a November series, the narrow wins over Australia and South Africa, and the not convincing performance over Fiji. Like, there was just no offloading in the team at all, because he's the best offloader in Irish rugby, and it just brings so many other players into the game. But then when you've got McCluskey and Crowley doing it as well, that was a big factor in Ireland scoring six tries yesterday, wasn't it? McCluskey's brilliant offload and the build-up to
Calvin
Gibson
Nash's,
Park coming around the corner.
Calvin Nash's try. That was, that was the best try of the day for me.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And it was, and McCluskey throws the one-hander, and then Crowley, I think, threw one immediately after that out of contact, yeah. And Gibson Park kind of bounces one tackler. Oh,
He's very unlucky, Stuart McCluskey, really, because in any other era, he might have won 50 caps.
That's the thing. Like, he's done this a few times. Do you remember the South Africa game in November 22 when he had a brilliant half an hour before getting injured? And it's a case of, you know, thanks, Stu, you've played really well, but Bundy's going to come back in now, and nobody really has any complaints or arguments.
He was talking about it yesterday in the press conference, like, just, you know, it's just my misfortune I've come along the year of two Lions centres, three arguably, Gary Reynolds should and could have been as well.
Yeah, it's like back row for Ireland. Like, I mean, it's just, you can be unlucky. It's nothing to do with your ability.
Imagine being a great 13 in the year of Brian O'Driscoll. You had to do what Gordon Darcy did, become a 12.
Yeah, I think also we should mention James Lowe. I mean, we've touched on him here, I think, as man of the match. I mean, it was a really, really good performance from James Lowe. He adds, and you've touched on it there, everything he brings to the game, the things that he does, the simple things and the difficult things, he does them to a very high level.
Well, we made the point yesterday when we were doing our live Twitter roundup show with Darce. For all James Lowe's offloading, we all take his left boot for granted now. I think
stunning weapon.
It's funny, all the kind of advanced analytics, nerdy statos love kicking as the stat more than anything else. So they all, James Lowe is always the top of their player of the match list because he kicks for 150.
These are all your friends.
150.
That's what you're saying.
We will. Yes, we've too much time in our mother's basements. But his defence is what I want to talk about. Like, we just don't talk about him being a defensive liability anymore. And he did get dropped for his defence early on in his Ireland career. I think last year he had 10 turnovers in the Six Nations. I'm pretty sure that was the highest number for an individual. He had another intercept yesterday getting into the passing lane. He did it last week in Marseille. He scored a try last year against Wales getting into a passing lane. That, we don't talk about the fact that he gets caught out defensively anymore, and he's consistently turning the ball over, and that's just something that I think that has made him pretty much as complete a winger as he needs to be.
Yeah, totally. Like, that left boot is such a weapon. It's got to be the best boot in the Six Nations. His finishing we know about, his offloading we know about, but you're right. I mean, those defensive reads have become so good now. And you remember that one that sealed the deal against the All Blacks in the Aviva as well at the end, the celebrations himself and Peter O'Mahony.
Well, that was when he gave that really impassioned TV interview where he gave out to the press for talking about his defence.
Yeah.
And he said, "You look at me smashing Rico here, Rico Ioane, and look at me winning the game for Ireland. Stop talking about my defence." And granted, that was over a year ago now, but it's not only has it become good enough, it's a weapon, it's turning the ball over.
It's a little bit disappointed that Ireland, the Irish rugby system, is not producing more wingers, that we have to go to New Zealand and Australia for our wingers. It's a little bit disappointing that we're not producing more scrum halves, that we have to go to New Zealand, and we're still, our second best scrum half is undoubtedly the 34-year-old who's been three Lions tours and been a great servant. And there aren't a lot of wingers and not a lot of fullbacks or scrum halves coming through. Like, if Hugo Keenan's ruled out of the next game, Ireland are going to somewhere they haven't been in a few years, because he's been just the sole occupant of the jersey.
Why is that, do you think?
I think Ireland have, particularly at underage levels for their underage teams, they tend to convert centres. So they want the best footballers on the pitch. And the out-and-out speedsters sometimes don't have the same skill sets as some of the other players. So if you look at even this year's under-20 team, so on one wing you've Finn Tracy, who's a centre, basically playing on the right wing, and played centre with I think Prez Bray, and then he played with Leinster, and he's now in the Connacht Academy. And then on the other wing, you've got Hugo McLaughlin, who's a fullback with Gonzaga last year, the Cup winners. Very, very good player. But again, if you were looking at top-end pace, we're not producing those sort of players, and haven't. And even if you look through the Grand Slam winning teams of the last couple of years, we don't, with the exception, you could probably argue, with Shea Mullins would be the one that might have something like that top-end pace. But this has been a problem in Irish rugby for quite a while. And as Gerry said, like, we are looking to, for that kind of, if you're looking to get cheap tries, for example, and this is a problem for Irish rugby and also for the provinces as well, if you don't have that top end speed. So if you can imagine, if you had a Cheslin Colby, Damien Penault, and you could pick any of the top level wings, and you could look at them, we'd just don't produce them in Irish rugby. Like, it's Dennis, you're going back, Dennis Hickey, James Topping, you know, kind of for the last two
guys. Earthy was quick.
Yes, he was. But he was, again,
Lukey was quick.
He was converted from a centre. Luke Fitzgerald was a full back. Mm-hmm. So all of these guys, none of them played wing in school, if you know what I mean. They came up, they played other positions. And it is.
It's not such a big problem at the moment in the sense that once Hanson and Lowe are fit or Nash or whoever, once there's a few to pick from, because Andy Farrell and Mike Katz's attacking system doesn't want a blinding, pacey, finishing type, like a Robert Balakoon, because Robert Balakoon doesn't give enough across the three-quarter line, doesn't come off his wing enough, doesn't get his hands the ball enough, doesn't put players into space, work harder off the ball. Farrell's attacking system just wants good attacking players across the back line, regardless of position. Yeah. And they all, it's very fluid and interchangeable. So in that sense, the players that Ireland have at the moment suits the system.
Yeah, I think that the other thing you point out is Nash played centre at school. James Lowe played full-back originally, and Mac Hanson was an out-half, who also played a little bit of centre and full-back.
Lowe could be an option of full-back, couldn't he?
Yeah, he could. I was just thinking that as well, out loud. So I think in those circumstances, we're just kind of proving the point here that versatility, that footballing ability is the prized asset, that you work hard, you work off your wing, you're not just a winger, but sometimes you just think somebody with Robert Balakoon's pace, not, you know, that sort of asset that you have, which we don't really have in Irish rugby. And like I say, through a succession of under 20 Grand Slam winning teams, you don't really have it there either.
I do think Irish rugby deserves some credit for, and you touched on it with James Lowe, like Lowe has become a much better player in the Irish system than I believe he ever would have become in the New Zealand system. Just through Leinster and Ireland, become, particularly in his defence and the use of him in the kicking game. And by the same token, I don't think Jameson Gibson-Park is definitely a product of the Leinster and Irish system now at this stage. He's played way more matches for Leinster and Ireland than he ever played in New Zealand, and he's become an infinitely better player through the Irish system as well. So I think they're Irish internationals by merit in many ways too.
Yeah, Gibson-Park was always going to struggle for game time. I think he was backing up TJ Perenara at the Hurricanes.
Somebody else as well. He was always back up. And I remember looking at the stats and like, I mean, his grandchildren are going to ask him one day, Dad, were you number 21 or 9? Because there's an awful lot of shirts with 21 on the back.
I want to touch on Italy briefly before we go to the other games and the tournament. Yep. I actually was quite impressed / surprised with Gonzalo Quesada, their head coach, after the match. I thought he was quite refreshing. I didn't understand much of what he said because it was in Italian. But when he did speak English, it was... Well, he compared Ireland to the All Blacks of his generation. Of course, he's 1999 kind of era. It was a pretty good All Blacks team. I think you had it in the paper today, Jerry, the kind of, if they have 100% line-out, 100% scrum, 100% high balls, really good ruck efficiency and destroy our breakdown, we can, you know, everyone talks about Italy being pragmatic, kicking more, being more competitive like that. That doesn't matter. If you're not putting any pressure on Ireland, which is what the point he was making, you're not gonna get anywhere. It doesn't matter how much you kick the ball or not, or where you play the game. If those are the stats that you're coughing up, you're in trouble.
Yeah, he was very generous in his praise towards Ireland. It's interesting how others perceive this Irish team. You'd imagine if they're watching on the Southern Hemisphere, they must be going, "Wow, Ireland are the real deal compared to everybody else." That's not to say that Ireland are nailed on certainties to win the Grand Slam or anything like it. I think there's tricky games coming up, not least in Twickenham. Yeah, I was a bit disappointed in the Italians, to be honest, Nathan. I was really encouraged by that first half performance against England. They haven't really developed on that. I've been disappointed in Paolo Garbisi, given all the promise that he showed a few years ago.
He's been really struggling. I think he struggled for Montpellier this year. He's taken a step back this season.
Yeah,
absolutely.
There's talk of being transferred to Toulon. Toulon need an out half and Montpellier need a something. I can't remember what. There's a player exchange. It's the new transfer system starting off in rugby in the top 14. So, yeah, he's been disappointed. I was a bit disappointed. The younger Garbisi didn't start, although Stephen Varney, that tackle on Dan Sheen at the corner was the tackle of the day to save a try. And in fairness, they did keep denying tries to Ireland at the end. They didn't throw in the towel or anything like it, but given they'd... And they've lost Negri and Cannone as well, or their main two ball carriers, but overall, the zero was never really in doubt once they missed that opening penalty, was it?
Yeah, they found a way through. At the times they found a way through, on a few occasions they found a way through, and then they managed to make a poor decision or a kind of handling error. I thought they were very heavily prescribed in what they were doing. I thought that they were very heavily patterned. They didn't play with any sort of heads up kind of vision. So they didn't problem solve on the pitch. They didn't stress Ireland really at all. They didn't react to the circumstances of the game. And that's a worry for the team, because if you're that heavily patterned and that's your instincts, or that's kind of coached into you, then it's going to be a bit of a problem when you don't get any gain lines, when you don't get kind of quick ruck ball, when your kicking game isn't functioning. You have to be able to adapt. And I think I agree with Jerry in the sense that, you know, that first, but it's classic Italian as well, that first half in Stadio Olimpico against England was good, and there was a lot of promise in it. The second half was kind of the way they follow up a good performance in the Six Nations with a poor one, or one that's lackluster or careless or ill-disciplined. And I thought they were just, even by, you know, I thought they were very lackluster yesterday. I thought there wasn't a lot to them, and I think they accepted their fate. They were gutsy in the fact that they kept going. But if you look at Ireland and you look at a 25-minute lull in the second half, and you think of the chances that, you know, Ireland, two tries correctly disallowed, another opportunity.
Oh, it could have been 50.
Yeah, and then you're thinking 50.
Exactly.
Where are we going here?
For that, it wasn't.
Yeah, same.
For me, there's three kind of areas that highlight where they struggled. 39% territory, give Ireland, for Italy, that is. So if you give Ireland that much territory, they're going to cut you open. 71% of Ireland's breakdowns, fewer than 3 seconds. Any team in the world is going to get cut open offering that quick ball. 450 metres made by Ireland after contact. So Italy, they just, that's probably a product of Ireland getting such quick ball.
Yeah, they won the gain line again, Ireland, commandingly. And that's partly not just to their strength in the carry, but also their footwork before the carry, which is way better than Italy's, and also their variety of their passing game and having runners off the ball, which Italy just didn't have anything like the same numbers. I give credit for Ireland. Their line speed, again, two games in a row, has been very, very good, consistently good all the way through.
On that defensive point, last six Six Nations games, Ireland have conceded 12 tries. The next best is France with 27. Yeah. So Ireland are 15 tries better than the opposition. And first time Ireland have nilled a side in the Six Nations, or Five Nations as it was back then, since 1987.
17-0 against England.
Exactly. Right, we'll leave the Ireland chat there. After the break, I will continue our conversation with Jerry Thorney and John O'Sullivan, and we're going to chat through the other games of this weekend's Six Nations.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to the Counter Ruck. My name is Nathan Johns, still here with Jerry Thornley and John O'Sullivan. Let's move on. Ireland's next opponent, Wales, in a fortnight. Obviously, there's the week off this week. They lost to England 16-14. Jerry, you asked Andy Farrell, actually, after the Ireland game, what did he make of the Welsh performance? I think it's safe to say, especially given Wales had that halftime lead and talk of rebuilding and a younger side under this Welsh side, etc. They're 0-2. They're still losing matches, but I think it's safe to say we didn't expect them to be as competitive going to Twickenham.
No, probably not. No, I would agree with you about that. Like, the penalty try off of Malta, the maul went well. That was surprising to see a young-ish Welsh pack mauling England for a penalty try. I thought the second try they scored was a cracker. It was the highlight of the game by some distance, which admittedly the bar was quite low. but the way they negotiated the Felix Jones blitz defence with the pass back inside, Tommy Rutherford was outstanding. Yeah. And they lead 14-5 at the break, and you're thinking, wow, this is really bad for Portugal and England. Wales could win this. To be honest, I never thought, from the moment England got a penalty back to 14-8, I never, Nathan, for a moment thought Wales were going to win that game.
Well, they didn't score in the second half.
And they never looked like scoring, Nathan.
No, they didn't.
And it wasn't lack of defence. I think it's just a lack of depth and quality. They just don't have the bench.
Well, I think that's their issue. Yeah. Look, they've got a 21-year-old captain. Gatland has turned the pack especially. He's turned that over to youth. But it's exciting. And you mentioned that try, I think it was Davies who got it? No, it was Thomas Wellington. I'm not sure, but I know exactly what try you're talking about, the offload try. And what they did there was a really interesting way of getting around the blitz defence. Was, first of all, they just threw the ball incredibly deep and accepted a collision, but well behind the gain line. But then they did a very good job of singling out the blitzers in England's defence who wouldn't be blitzing, and that is the front row forwards. If you look at it, it's Will Stewart who gets targeted by Reffel, the tight head prop.
And he has to fill the gap.
Because he's not as fast as the guys on his outside, there's a massive dog leg. Something Ireland do really well. They did it very well against the All Blacks on that tour. They targeted the All Blacks front row when they won down there. So that's when Wales dealt with the blitz very well, but they didn't deal with it well in other stages. I think the Ben Earl try came off the fact that their 10 decided to try and run inside his 22 and the blitz swallowed him up, etc. So I think, I know what you're going to say, John, because we were talking about it before. We're here praising Wales. I think you're going to highlight the fact that the game was a little bit substandard and you wouldn't be too overly concerned.
I think that it was a tough watch. I think that if you were a partisan, it's okay. If you were a neutral, you would have found it tough to watch all of that game. I think when you look back and you say that, I can't remember, it was Stewart, the England fullback, Freddie Stewart got man of the match. I think it was Tommy Rafael all day long. And if you look at the fact that the Welsh Open side should have been man of the match, it'll tell you a lot about the fact that his turnovers were highlighted. So he did a lot to stem the English tide for a long time. And I agree with Gerry about the fact that at no point did I think Wales were going to win the match, because they just seemed to suddenly realise that they were winning a match. And all of a sudden, they got a little bit of stage fright and they weren't sure how they were going to continue to win a match. So what they did then was become more conservative, and that suited England down to the ground, because Wales kept giving England back the ball and England kept going, OK, we'll have a rattle with this. And they weren't particularly kind of innovative, but they just kind of pummeled away long enough to give them the field position to get enough, just about enough scores to win the match. And then when Wales realised that, you know, kind of towards the tail end of the match, they might lose this, then they started to throw the ball around. The point you made about Johan Lloyd running around like a headless chicken in his 22 and, you know, is well made. Some of his cross-kicking early on in the game was a little bit ill-judged. And I think in a general sense, from game management sense, I think they're still looking for that 10.
Oh, big time.
But there are qualities to the Wales side. So I'll preface this. I didn't think it was a great match to watch. But I think for Welsh supporters, I think there's a lot to enjoy in terms of the players coming through. How long that takes and where they get to, and I think is still to be determined. But yeah, you can see that they have some very good young players, but they always have. The question is getting enough of them into the team.
They lack real presence at half, don't they? They really do. Like, you think of, we talked about Jack Crowley in the post-Sexton era. You can talk about Finn Smith coming through as well as Mark Smith, and having George Ford there in England in the post-Owen Farrell era. Post Dan Biggar era is not looking so good for the Welsh, sadly, you know. And he was a real standard bearer for them for over a decade, in the same way Johnny was, same way Owen Farrell was. Like, it's a landmark Six Nations having none of the three.
It will be very interesting to see. I think Callum Sheedy is moving back from Bristol to Cardiff. He's going to be back in the fold at some point. So it'll be interesting to see, do they parachute him in once he's back and eligible once again?
I'm a big Dan Biggar fan. I think he's a great competitor. I think the fact that himself and Johnny Sexton used to be as cranky with each other on the pitch, two great competitors.
And Biggar in the end too.
Yeah, absolutely. And off the pitch, very good friends, and they speak very warmly about each other.
Yeah.
But I think he provided Wales with a presence, you know, he was very good under pressure. He was just a good player. And I think you're right. I think they missed somebody like that who could give them a different dimension and manage the game a little bit better for them. And therefore, they would be more of a threat. They've some good young players, and there's no doubt about that. And they always produce, you know, decent wing, decent full backs. You know, George North has been rejuvenated playing in the centre. So, you know, they ask questions.
But that 30-odd phase drive at the end, like, they went backwards as much as they went forwards. They never, it was all one off. Gerry Fannery was summing up really well in co-commentary. I mean, it just, they never even looked like they're going to get within drop goal range or penalty range.
No. Gerry Fannery, man of the match, I think, that day, in terms of the most impressive thing from that game was his commentary. I just think too often you get commentators complaining about teams going backwards or kicking too much and calling it boring all the time, but he actually explained what was going on, which is a bit of a rarity. Right, the other game, I think we have to talk about that Scotland try. That wasn't, they lost 16-20 to France. Scotland threw that game away, I think it's fair to say, but they will say that they scored that try. Where do you stand on the try that wasn't?
I think that it was probably a try without any definitive proof that it was a try, but in all probability, it was a try. I think that rugby is tying itself in knots with its use of the TMO and this business of what the referee calls it on field. If it's like the try that wasn't for France as well on a different night, we could have been complaining a lot about that second try that France scored. There was no video evidence to prove that was a
the
try
one in Marseille.
Yeah, there was just no proof of that at all. And I think if a referee says on field decision is such and such is a try or whatever, why, just in case of semantics, why are we hidebound by that, by the referee saying that if he's not sure? I mean, just why not just in future, I think it's a try, but is it a try, yes or no? Well, it would be such a better, simple question. Yeah. And then you get better outcomes.
Correct.
But I think the logic behind it is the hope the TMO system is there to get rid of clangers. Mm. So if it's 50-50, you just stick with what the referee has said, which is fine, but it does mean in situations like this where everybody...
The referee didn't know. That was the thing.
Yeah.
Well, he
and likewise in Marseille, how on earth could Dixon call that a try?
Yeah.
Or the touch when it wasn't a try.
So you're saying it should be amended, that the referee should be able to say, I don't know, instead of an on-field decision.
Or even just say, I think it's a try, but I stand to be corrected, or whatever. Saying, is it a try, yes or no? Not this on-field decision is.
You can still
semantics.
You can still kick it upstairs. So if Nick Berry had the facility to turn around and go to the TMO, I don't know whether it's a try or not. If you can conclusively prove via the pictures that you're watching that it's a try, we'll give it, and if you don't, we won't give it. And it would still have reached the same conclusion, because Brian McNeice didn't have any footage that conclusively proved that a try had been scored.
Mm.
And the law of probability, yes, it was a try, the law of probability.
Mm.
And in the old days, it would have been given as a try, because the instinct, I think, would have been,
Could you give John West the referee? Definitely would have given. But, I thought Finn Russell's reaction was very mature afterwards. Yes, I thought it was a try, but we should have made sure that game a lot sooner than that, which I thought was very honest of them. They should have. Like, Brian Clough used to always say, if you want to be absolutely sure you beat the opponents, go two goals up, not one.
Yeah, no, I think that was very true. And we can look at... The other thing is that, okay, we can get back into it. It's another officiating decision. So Gael Fiku is stopped by Duhan van der Merwe.
Oh, completely.
With an arm around around shoulder.
Seatbelt tackle.
Yeah.
And then he's offside from the reset.
Correct. And
that's a penalty try and a yellow card.
You're wondering how they can arrive at these decisions.
Yeah.
So you're looking at it and you're thinking, okay, if you say that, and there's nuances according to Nigel Owens, who was asked about this, and he said, well, he didn't target the neck. And you're going, well, he grabbed him around the neck. So whether he targeted the neck or not, he stops him by putting his arm around his shoulder, neck, and pulling back. And then he's offside.
That was even worse, almost, the offside. So, he was never retreated behind the hindmost foot.
I think that, you know, you can look at... And the one thing, sorry, I would say about Scotland is that they had enough possession to win the match.
Definitely.
They decided to kick it away for long periods in the second half. We won't get into the Antoine Dupont rule here. Because
I think we just all agree that that rule needs to be changed and move on.
It's just unwatchable. Again, a part of that game was unwatchable. Like, it was a poor watch again. It was another match that was a poor watch. But I do think Scotland have to look to themselves. And it goes back to the point that they had enough possession to win the game. France could argue that Gael Fiku should have had a penalty try in those circumstances. And what were France doing at that scrum at the end of the match?
Yeah.
Well, like, what were they doing? Like, this is in their control.
Yeah.
The game's over.
Yeah.
And they somehow find a way to get a silver salver out and present an opportunity to Scotland. And unfortunately for Scotland, it was denied by television.
The opening two rounds have revealed two things for me that are not even that different from last season. The biggest difference from last season is not that Ireland have progressed and carried on and so far remained the top of the table team and the best team in it, but how France have regressed from where they were in that first half against Ireland, that match against Ireland, where they were at Twickenham last season when they pulverised England, to where they were in the first half against South Africa in the World Cup quarterfinal, to where they are now. It's quite extraordinary. You can't just attribute it all to just Antoine Dupont not being there.
No, I think that's very true. Like, we have said for a couple of weeks now, when you watch Nolan Le Garec come on the pitch and the speed at which France play when he is there, when you watch Louis Bielbieri take the try the way he did, like just an individual piece of brilliance.
Yeah.
And then you look at a coach who has kind of put all his eggs in the intensity, physicality basket for France against Ireland. And you're thinking, if you have players of this quality, why aren't you playing them? In Bieri's case in particular, because he's a brilliant wing. He's a brilliant young wing. And I wonder if at what point Fabian Galthi is going to realise that, you know what, actually, no, we've got to go and play some rugby. When you look at individuals within the team, and also you're probably looking at Jonathan Dante, who hasn't been in good form in the centre. Gael Fiku, came back and
didn't
and
played, he played well. Yeah, he played very well. Slaughtered all week long in France, but he did respond.
He did respond. And then you're looking at the wings, Louis Bielbieri and Damien Penault. If you have all these players not attacking quality, why wouldn't you give them the ball?
I think that I could very much see them starting Le Garec in a fortnight's time, especially that pass he gave for Bielbieri. Tries fantastic. Right, before we go, we should also mention the 20s obviously had a 1-point win, 23-22.
I was going to say about the 20s, they all went to the Spar shop later on that night to buy lottery tickets because they won that match. And we have, I think Johnny Waterson touched on it this morning, like the Scalabrine, I think the Italian right winger, scored 2 tries, saved another try, basically did everything he could to win the match and still didn't get man of the match, which Johnny Waterson has touched on in the paper, which makes an absolute fallacy, these awards, basically sponsors awards. But sorry, just to touch on that, I think there was a physical legacy from a short turnaround playing against France.
5 days, of course. Yeah.
And coming back home.
TV, go away. Will you? You shouldn't be doing that to under 20. TV controls sport too much. It really does. Well, you're fighting a 5-day turnaround on under 20 side.
And you're travelling. And this is Junior World Cup stuff. This is like playing 2 matches in, you know, kind of 5 days stuff. And I think there was a legacy issue there. I think any team would miss Brian Gleeson. There are issues with the 20s from a defending tackling perspective. They were poor and that it was a big wake-up call for them.
It doesn't look a vintage 20s, John, compared to the last few years.
Well, it's funny, if you spoke to Richie Murphy before the tournament, he would have said there was more depth, less marquee players, and I think that what they're looking for, so coming down the track, and it's not that you would take the Welsh game for granted, but England have 2 props and a scrummaging pack. And if you look at the areas where Ireland are struggling, we'll say, in matches, scrum is one of them. And that will be a problem for them. I think it's just, if you look at it, you would say that they have played in fits and starts. Their tackling isn't up to scratch. And Richie Murphy was very honest afterwards in the match. He said, look, we got away with one here. And they'll have a 2-week lead into Wales. They should be better. If Brian Gleeson is back, it'll be a plus. And they found a way, which is what you would say, they found a way to win a match in which they were struggling, which is something to their credit. You know, you give them credit for that.
Player of the opening 2 rounds, I'm definitely going to go Jack Crowley, because I've got time to think of it there while John was talking about the under-20s, and I thought about it. I've just enjoyed his 2 performances immensely. I was a bit worried about the post-Johnny Sexton era. He only had started 3 games for Ireland. He'd done well against Australia, hadn't done so well in the other 2 Six Nations game away to France in Marseille. I thought the Virgin panel were a little harsh on him, to be honest. I thought, for the same reason I outlined earlier, number 10 is going to make mistakes because he's going to make the most decisions. I like the swagger to his performance. I think it's good. It's really encouraging for the future, for him and for Irish rugby, that we've got this little potential jewel. I'm not going to say he's going to be a brilliant 10, but there is definitely enough in those 2 performances to give you a load of encouragement about him in the future. Wouldn't you agree?
I would, and I'm kind of tempted to pick him. There are shades of Joey Carberry about Jack Crowley. You know, that kind of goose step, that swagger, that ability to take the ball to the line. So what Jack Crowley needs is a run without injuries, and he needs a run in the 10 shirt all of the time, as much time as he possibly can, and he'll develop. But if you're asking me to pick a player, I'll go Ireland again, and I will go with their imperious fullback, Hugo Keenan.
Yeah.
I just watch him play, and it's like he's watching the game unfold in slow motion. He's in all the right places. He makes all the right decisions. He chases lost causes, or certainly causes where it's a kind of 60-40 in favour of the defender. He tracks people. He makes tackles. He catches high balls. He's in the right place. He gives the opposing out half a poor look at space. There's no space. He covers very well. His communication with his wings is good. And for me, he is probably the one player in the team that's close to irreplaceable for the reasons that Jerry outlined earlier on, with the injury profile and stuff like that. And he's difficult to replace in the team at the moment. He's just...
I couldn't dispute anything you just said there. Like, you think back to Marseille, and he made 3 brilliant defensive try-saving reads and executions. Didn't get his hands on the ball much at all. Yesterday, that tap and go from his mark was actually what brought the crowd to life. For a brief while even, and brought the team alive. And same with his, I presume he called that chip from Craig Casey, and the ground he covered to get onto the ball. So it was great to see him get on the ball and show what a great attacking player he is. We only ever know him now when he makes a mistake, which is almost never.
Right, we'll leave it there for today. My thanks to Jerry and John, as always, as well as our sponsors,
Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. You've been listening to The Counter-Ruck. Make sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back on Thursday, where we have a very special guest for The Down Week.